on this issue in your neighborhoods, in your community. We believe the people on the ground are the best people to determine what needs to be done with resources that actually save our children. And we believe that oftentimes the people on the ground, the people closest to this pain every day, are the people who are not listening to. And so we'll do a lot of listening in the part of this, but also informing you, giving you information about your own neighborhood that you might not be aware of, that can help us build on this strategy. And we'll talk a lot today about why this is happening in our community and the history behind all of it. I just truly believe, unless you know the reason why something is happening, you're never really going to solve it. I mean, that's almost like the first point of solving a problem. You got to know and understand the problem if you're going to be able to solve the problem. And not just on a surface level, not just on who's shooting who you had a beef with who, how do we deal with the beef situation, but the reasons the beefs are coming up in the first place. All right, so I'm really going to need your attention. We got a small room here, so if you speak, your voice carries, and I can't be able to communicate, so I really need your help here. So the first slide I want you to see today, it says 5,000 block of Sherman Tunnel, but don't worry about that. This is your area. The rec center is right here. And so, basically, you're between a couple of the 57 blocks. What is the 57 block? A 57 block is where there's 10 or more shootings since 2015 on that one block. 10 or more shootings since 2015 on that one block. All right? And so that's where the 57 block is. If it's 9, we don't count it, but that doesn't mean we won't work with you and try to help and support you in all of what you do. All right? So what we do is take a radius of about a half a mile around each one of those blocks. Like this is 800 Clearfield. That's over here. But the radius around it is the whole area we're kind of working with. This one over here is what, 1,500 block of? This is 800 Clearfield, which had 10 shootings since 2015. Your council person is Darrell Clark. Your state house person is Malcolm Kenyatta. And we have your other data and information. And also, could we have all the phones put on vibrate if we could? Thank you so much. Appreciate it. And the other block, which is block over here, 1,500 Tioga? I'm not sure. I believe it is. 1,500 block of Tioga, which also had 10 or more shootings. And the radius around it had multiple shootings. And again, the Cambrian Recreation Center is right in the middle of that. I know you might have your own stories of blocks that also have a lot of shootings in. And we take the police data when we said 10 or more shootings. It doesn't mean that there are not more shootings that the police has never found out about, or the police never were informed about, or the police never put that information in. So you might be right in saying, hey, no, I know a couple other blocks around here just as violent. You have better knowledge than often the police do, and often than we do, but I wanted to share what we have collected so you understand what we're trying to do. Let's go to the next slide. Really, one of the big things that we're trying to share here as a part of, and I said, the reason why we have those kind of shootings on the block is because of what we believe is structural racism. That the racism that you've seen in this city for years has caused all of this to come together to create the number of shootings that we're having right now. See, we believe strongly that we need to hold it. Hold the point. We believe strongly that if you're not talking about the underlying root of racism in all of our systems, then we're not going to really solve the problem. We had 562 shootings last year. We all on 563. 563 last year homicides of 2,000, over 2,000 shootings last year. We're on pace to do exactly the same number again this year, 563 homicides, 2,000 shootings. But the reality is, even before the pandemic, we have averaged 362 homicides every year for the last 50 years. So everybody was talking about, well, my generation was better, we handled it better. Not really. This has been a problem for 50 years. I remember in the 70s, growing up in the 70s, people shooting all the time. And I remember also people, it was the tic-tac-toe gang that would play tic-tac-toe on your face with a razor blade. And now everybody want to talk about the good old days. There wasn't no good old days. I remember playing in the Bill Barry League in the summer of 77 on Barry Playground in South Philadelphia. And we were having a good time balling. And somebody got angry at man because he got showed up. I wasn't there, but he came back and he shot the guy because he got showed up. People act like that didn't happen then. That happened. So we need to be real. This is not a problem that just is happening, that somehow our young people today are so different. I mean, they are different in some ways, going through all that. But not that they're so different, because some of that stuff was happening then. And it was till the community got together to stop the gang war in the 70s that stopped that. It was the community. Well, not the police. It was the community that stopped that. And every time there's been a lot of violence, a surge of violence in our community, it has always been the community that has come together to stop it more than the police. So we want to recognize that structural racism is one of the reasons this thing keeps going on and on. Because the gun violence is just the tip of the iceberg. And if you look at these maps, this is a map of Philadelphia here, in Philadelphia with this crazy shape. Where you see the pink and the blue, that's where black folk live at. Black and brown folk live at. Black is the purple. It's the pinkish color. Latinx is the purple color. So you see, that's pretty much right in the middle of Philadelphia and West Philadelphia. If you look at these maps, and they're kind of hard to see, they're almost the same kind of map. Where the color is darker on these maps, most of the time, that's where black and brown people are. And so we see then, if you're talking about poverty in the city of Philadelphia, it's a black and brown problem. If you see income equality, it's a black and brown problem. Unemployment in Philadelphia is a black and brown problem. Less than a high school diploma, for the most part, even though there's some areas in the Northeast, it's a black and brown problem. Getting evicted, a black and brown problem. Foreclosure rates, black and brown problem. No internet, that's a big one today. You don't have the internet, you can't get a job because everybody does it online. So internet access, big one. Again, see the dark areas? That's black and brown people without internet access. No health insurance. That's black and brown folk don't have a doctor. Your doctor, most black and brown folk doctor is the emergency room. We go to the emergency room when we need something. We don't have our own doctor because many times we don't have the health insurance. Mental illness. All this pressure that comes down on us. We try to act like it doesn't affect us. It is. It is. And you see it right here. Again, mental illness in the black and brown communities. And that doesn't mean we gotta stop that thing about, we don't act like we crazy. The stigma of not going to get help. Look, everybody needs some help now and then. This stressor is pressing on you, and what do? We end up going to the bottle or going to some drugs, and that's how we try to handle it. Or hurt each other. Instead of getting some help to talk through our problems. We don't have access to the kind of counselors that can help us too. And so that's why that's the prevalence of mental illness. Child blood lead levels. If you got peeling paint in an old house, you probably got lead in that paint. And that goes right, if there's children there, if they eat it, goes right into their blood system and it stays right there. Asthma rates, black and brown folk. Fewer markets with fresh products, black and brown folk. Unsafe buildings, black and brown folk. Vacant businesses, Y'all seen it?
Yeah.
Black and brown folk. Litter and trash. You know, not because we're not cleaning. We clean all the time. But we don't have the services to come pick up. They don't pick up in our neighborhood. Y'all know what I'm talking about. In the same way that other neighborhoods. Some places you don't see a stitch of trash. Ever. You know they throwing the trash down there on the street just like everybody else. How ain't a stitch of trash on this? The sidewalk's so nice you can eat on the sidewalk. But their sidewalks look like that, but our sidewalks are not. Because they got the services. Services that support that. And heat exposure. It is horrible that this pool is not open. Because lack of trees in the area means this is one of the biggest places for heat exposure. Where there's not trees, North Philly has probably less trees than any section of the city. That means it is hotter. It is hotter in North Philly. They, you know, when you see the AccuNew weather, they'll give you the temperature at the airport, and they'll give you the temperature in the Northeast, and they'll give you the temperature in the shore. But they don't give you the temperature in North Philly because they know it's hot in there.
I got that. That's true.
Don't give me North Philly. Before North Philly is always 3 or 4 or 5 degrees hotter because of lack of trees, lack of grass, lack of all of that. Heat exposure, that's the dark areas. Again, that's black and brown community. So we have a plethora of stuff that happens that creates the environment for gun violence. And I'm going to tell you it's true. I heard one young person say to me last summer, he said, why should I care for my own life? Why should I care? I walk out on the street, there's trash everywhere. I go to my school, there's paint falling from the ceiling. There's rusted pipes in the water, so I can't drink from the water fountain. People don't care about us, so why should I care about me? True statement. I mean, a statement that young person said tells you how this affects young people when they get a little bit older and they look around and they see their own communities. See, all of this affects gun violence. And unless we work on all of it, we might save a few lives doing some things, but we won't get down to the number we really want, which is zero homicides. Zero. There are neighborhoods in this city that have zero homicides. Ain't nobody shooting nobody, and they got kids. So if they can have that for themselves, why can't we? Christmas. My bad.
My name is Christian Smith, Philadelphia native, and I'm currently working for the District Attorney's Office of Philadelphia as a data analyst. So I did a lot of the analytical work here, and my purpose of being here is to reduce violence. That's because as a youth growing up here, it was bad, but it wasn't as bad now. It's almost like every day, multiple homicides occur, so we got to bring that down.
All right. Philadelphia home. Temple Law, LaSalle graduate, Temple Masters, working on another master's. Picture of it for yourself, that's fine too, so you at least have the definition. 57 blocks is the working name for a strategy aimed at reducing gun violence and addressing its harmful impacts on the hardest hit neighborhoods through targeted investment of resources. So you say, how are we going to reduce gun violence? Targeted investment of resources, services, education, and environmental improvements. Say, what's the strategy? Target the hardest hit areas with targeted investment, services, education, and environmental improvements to deal with all the stuff I just mentioned and also things to directly talk to young people and to move them out of gun violence. All right, so this strategy is designed to bring non-law enforcement, we'll talk about that in a minute, evidence-based services and improvements to the people and the places that need them the most. See, I'm sure out of this meeting, when we talk about solutions, you're gonna say, we needed to have the pool open this summer.
Yes.
you know somebody is going to lose their life because the pool wasn't open. Because they would have been at the pool and sit on that corner. Mm-hmm. All right? That the pool not being open affects the lives of children and young people. So y'all know that already. And so it is a crime that this pool is not open. And we know it's about lifeguards and all that. And I'm sure your rec center leader has been doing everything he can. But that can't happen in a city that has billions of dollars.
Right.
That cannot happen to have the pool not open for the kids.
Yeah.
All right? So that's what we talk about, targeted investment. We got to demand that we can't even begin to have that next year. We can't have excuses of that not happening. We must have that. And that's the kind of thing that we want to be able to do, to give you voice so that you can be able to say that with power. All right, now there's other things we need to do too, but I point that one out. Go to the next slide. So what's a place-based strategy? Place-based strategy is one that examines and seeks to change the social, environmental, and economic factors that negatively impact people's health and safety. That was a screen that showed you all of those things. We want investment to change all of that. Many people in our communities observe and research corroborates that poverty, disinvestment, disrepair, and blight in our neighborhoods are linked to increased violence. We know all of the stuff I had just mentioned all connects to increased violence. To create a lasting and safety, we must end poverty, invest in our neighborhoods and our neighbors, and make every block in Philadelphia a beautiful place. And so that is our bold mission with this 57 blocks. It's not just working on the 57 blocks, it's working on all of these neighborhoods so that all of them have the resources they need. You on the next slide. One thing about place space, I should say as well, is you know the place has something to do with the violence. Because as soon as you get somebody off the street who was doing a lot of shooting, there's another one coming right in. And as soon as you get that one, here come another one. And as soon as you get that, here come another one. And they get younger and younger. So you know it's not all about those individuals. There is something happening in the community that is creating these young people, that when they were 4 or 5, they'd be bouncing on your knee, having fun with you, playing ball, you know, all that. Even take them to the park. Then some at 13 and 14, all of a sudden they changing, and they shooting each other.
And us.
And they shooting us. Our own children. Because something was happening in their minds because of the environment and the place that they lived in. That not because of our fault, but because of the lack of investment in our community. All right? This ain't about blaming us. This is about us not having enough resources in our schools and everywhere else to do better, to help our own children. Go to the next one. Non-law enforcement. Yes, I'm sure. Non-law enforcement. This strategy is non-law enforcement. We believe you need several strategies to be able to deal with gun violence. Law enforcement has its place, and they need to do their job. All right? Let's be clear about that. But this strategy is focused on non-law enforcement stuff, because we got about $1 billion we spend on law enforcement. The police department, about $800 million a year. About $1 billion total we spend when you add the courts and the DA, everybody else. You spend about $1 billion each year on law enforcement. We spend $13 million on community organizations like you. Now, how can we win that fight? You swinging with one arm. That one arm doing a whole lot. But I know if I'm fighting with one arm and that other one got two, I'm getting punched in the face all the time. Because the prevention arm is too skinny to do nothing. It's wavering down here, can't do nothing. Because we're not investing into it. It's not that you don't have the ideas already. It's just we haven't done as big as those ideas should be. We haven't invested enough in them. We know what to do to save our children.
We just need the resources to do it.
Y'all know.
If y'all get them early enough,
y'all know
what to do. The summer camps, the basketball leagues, the better schools, all the things that in every other neighborhood that keep their kids safe. You should want the same here. That's what keep us safe here. So that's non-law enforcement people. But it's also about public health. You know, that some problems we handle by like law enforcement, like addiction, you know, people who are straight up addicted to whatever the drug is today. They just addicted and they act out of their addiction. All right? Let me tell you this story quickly. I was pastoring a church in Bucks County and was there a couple of days, got a call, one of the parishioners had an addiction problem, was caught by the police. All right, so I'm going down to the police department. This is Bucks County, right outside of Philadelphia. I'm going down to the police department to see the young man. They tell me, I get down there, they tell me, no, he ain't there. He at the hospital. I said, well, you took him to the hospital? Yeah, because addiction is a sickness and he needs to get help. I said, that's what they're doing in Bucks County. They ain't not doing that here. They'll put you in jail here. And they get mad at the DA every time he keeps saying, that's not what we should be doing. And then they get mad at the DA and say, you letting everybody go. No, I'm trying to get it. It's an addiction. It's an illness. It needs public health. It's a public health. You had your hand. I'm sorry, brother.
Well, when they told you he went to the hospital, did you check? Mm-hmm. Did you check to see, was he there?
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. And he was there for 72 hours because they 302'd him. Okay. Mm-hmm. They're like, you got to deal with that, brother. And then they recommended him to go 6 months to treatment and counseling, outpatient. Mm-hmm. Now, he had a couple other relapses, and they still did not. I was there for 9 years. He had a couple other relapses. They still didn't put him in jail. What? But now he's healthy, he's not addicted, he's married with a couple kids, doing well. Yeah, I want to say to you, a lot of those changes have happened under the Krasner administration.
Absolutely.
And he's catch hell over that.
Yes, sir.
Because he keeps saying it's a public health. But one of the problems in this city is not enough beds, not enough hospitals willing to do that kind of practice,
not enough money invested.
But you're right. There are some places in Philly that's beginning to happen. Thanks for saying that. And let's be clear. There are people who are mentally ill.
Absolutely.
That through whatever, genetically, whatever, they're dealing with severe mental illness. Then there's people who are dealing with depression and sadness. And that through treatment, they'll be fine.
Right.
All right. We that kind of delineation needs to happen. That kind of treatment needs to happen, and we need to have less incarceration. Because if we really were dealing with the folk up there on street road, probably good 2/3 of them got some mental illness and some depression and other issues that they're working through. We don't have enough counselors to be able to address all of it. Why? Because we invest $1 billion in what?
That's right.
Law enforcement. And the 13 million in community groups.
More hospitals, or the hospitals, the people.
That's right.
People in the community.
Mm-hmm.
They've been closing them down.
Mm-hmm. They've been closing that. And it's much more. I'm not a treatment expert, so I'm not going to go there. But there's much more that can be done, and much more resources we can get. Question.
And one of the greatest problems is non-financial investment in our community. Groups like this center here and other groups here, I'm glad to crash for these gentlemen here tonight to invest in us. Make sure your ideas come up, because it's going to happen. Many problems that we had in West Philadelphia, a young boy had a mental problem. When the cops came, they didn't notice that as a mental problem because they're not trained for them, but they shot him. See? So many things. When we have fights in our schools, I'm a retired school teacher, they don't send our kids to counseling, they send them to jail. So that it's been very unfair, but thank God you guys are here and the grassroots are doing stuff and all. We're here saying, it's up to us now. It's up to us. Let's get together.
And we're going to do that. Let me talk a little bit more.
Yes.
Come on. All right. This map, remember, I talked about the conditions of where we are today, but I didn't explain why we are where we are. And so this map is to help us. This map is to help us. Again, this is a small room, so you do a little talking, everybody's gonna hear. So if you got to say something, step out for a minute.
Okay.
This map is to give you some sense of how we got where we are. All right? So there's two things on this map, and you have this map in front of you. Two things. It's about how we got where we are. The red dots are all the 57 blocks. Okay. And remember, people shout on the 57 blocks. Every block with 10 or more shootings since 2015 is one of the 57 blocks, and you see them scattered throughout the city. Kensington, North Philly, Germantown, West Philly. Now, what's underneath the map tells the story, because this is called a redlining map from 1937. Anybody know what redlining is? Redlining?
Yes. All right. Yes. Exclude certain people from getting access to money, it's like mortgages and all that kind of stuff, and keeping you at bay in restricted areas.
Okay. Absolutely. Redlining restricted investment from coming in the red areas and the yellow areas. So here's the big thing. In 1934, it was the Depression. They were starting to build out of the Depression. So the federal government told all the private banks, look, if you make loans, we'll stand behind every loan. That means if they default, we'll pay you. That means to the banks, they were saying, even if you lose money, we don't pay you. Just you put the money out and tell the people to pay. If they pay you, fine. If they don't, we'll pay you. And we'll do it because we want to see people buy homes and we want to see them invest in their own communities. And so this was the start of what we call the 30-year mortgage, the 15-year mortgage. You buy a house, you get a 30-year mortgage. You don't own a house right away. You got to keep paying. And you keep paying, and you pay with a lot of interest, but you keep paying. You own, but you still own the house. All right? And that house becomes your asset. And you can sell it, and it can appreciate in value, and you get more money from it. All the things of home ownership. So they were doing that in the blue area, in the green areas, and they were telling them that. In the red and yellow areas, they told the banks, don't put no money in there. We ain't standing behind any loans in those areas. And those areas were the black and brown areas. This was intentional. They literally wrote this in the law. That this is how they were going to do. Now, before they did this, in Philadelphia, black people used to live all over Philadelphia. Man, people know that black folk live with today with a society here. That was a black neighborhood. Mm-hmm. They black folk didn't live in a few spots. Black folk lived all over. Anywhere we wanted to live. But when they did this, they forced, and with some other stuff called restricted covenants, that said, told white people, you can't sell this property to anybody black. You can only sell it to white folks. They put that in the deed. In the deed, you cannot sell this to somebody black. They mess us up more by urban renewal, by taking eminent domain and taking some of our property and shifting around. There's a place in downtown on Christian Street. Used to be the Martin Luther King Towers.
Yeah.
So they knocked those down, but they also took eminent domain of the black homeowners that were in that area. Now those properties there go for $1 million. Same area. They're black folk living. So they used, I want to be clear, intentionally. They did this on purpose. They were open with doing this. They thought this was best for America that they did this. They thought investing in white people was the best thing for America. That's why they did this. This is only 80, 90 years ago. And we're living with the effects of this today.
Yeah.
The fact that you had to fight for this rec center here, and you said they still ain't build it out all the way like they were supposed to. They ain't wanna put no money here in the first place. Because the red line said we ain't put no money there. So I want you to understand this was government policy. And it was government policy all the way to the late 1970s. Late 1970s when they finally passed the Fair Housing Act and also something called Community Reinvestment Act. But those things didn't never really solve the problem. They just said, we'll stop doing it. But they still do it and violate the law. And they never really have solved the problem of the wealth. Go ahead, man.
Okay, well, before this was a playground, this was a cardboard factory.
Mm-hmm.
That was here for years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They had an 8 alarm.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to tear the whole.
Mm-hmm.
All this was that factory.
Yep.
This playground was that factory.
Thank you for sharing that. And the power of that is that in all of these factories that they had, not only here, but you can look right down all the way down Lehigh, the empty factories that had. Philadelphia used to build everything. Anything in the world was built here in Philadelphia and built in North Philly. They used to build planes, jet planes, here in North Philly. You could go to the factory and go get yourself a job, right out of high school. All of that was the other piece. And when the riots happened or the protests happened, white flight happened, they took all of those plants, moved them to the suburbs. Then they moved to the south. Now they're overseas, and those jobs are gone with it. And they never replace any investment back here in these communities.
You know why they're overseas? Cheaper labor.
Cheap labor.
Cheaper labor.
And but also, why they're not here is because they disinvested in this community. All right. I'm saying to you, all of this stuff is what's happening today, what you see today in your neighborhood, the houses you see, the empty factories you see, the lack of investment you see, the schools that are falling down. It all was intentional. All was intentional. And we got to grasp that in our mind, because if public policy caused this and caused what you're seeing today, then guess what? If you change the policy, you can change the community as well.
Exactly.
We don't have to keep it this way. They did this intentionally, and we can intentionally do something different. We can do something different in our community. We can push our government to do more, to do the right thing. Instead of disinvesting, now we got a premium of investing in our community. We can make them do that.
Change in policy.
And then when we invest in our community, it helps build jobs, it helps build the community, it helps being able to say to them young people who need jobs, yes, why don't you go see Mr. Mack down the corner, because he got a grocery store down there, and he'll give you a job. We're running out of Mr. Mac down the corner because we don't own our own businesses. And sometimes owning your own business, that little job sweeping up the hair in the barbershop, that little job being at the counter and dealing with the grocery, that little gig, that little summer job I had when they used to have something called a CETA job. CETA job, CETA program. I had a CETA job at the recreation center. I sat down there, didn't do much, but I got a check and I felt good and stayed out of trouble. Why can't there be a bunch of kids out here right now that had jobs, even if they were just sitting here? And happen to get educated, have to learn, and get the check too. You know, we put 8,000 kids to work, and we think we did something over something. Hey, there's 20, 30, 40, 100,000 kids. Anyway, this is where it starts at. And we're dealing with 5, 6, 7, 8 generations of this. Go on to the next one. And you can see, the white dots are all the shootings. Okay? And so this is West Philly here. And you see all the shootings from 2015, and you still see it in the yellow, in the red areas. And if you see it in blue areas, those areas are changing. They're pushing black folk up in those areas. So they're pushing black folk up in the Northeast. They're pushing up in the Northeast. This North Philly, you see it here. It's in some of the blue areas here, but they're pushing black folk up in the Northeast. And so gentrification is a part of this too. They move us around. And when they move us around, it causes more gun violence. Talking to a brother, you had your hand up?
Yeah, I'll wait till you finish it.
Yeah, talking to a brother last night. And I'm almost done. I'm talking to a brother last night. Brother said he had a barbershop on 5,000 Germantown. That block that had 18 shootings since 2015. He said he know most of them kids that shoot. They were in his basketball league. They were in his football league. They were good kids. He said, but when they closed the high school down and they had to go across several different neighborhoods to get to Martin Luther King High School, they start coming to the youth stuff and they start doing the violent stuff. First it was about protecting themselves. Then they start getting in it because somebody got a beef and somebody got a beef and somebody got a beef. He said if they kept the high school open, I think half of them kids wouldn't be in. That's what disinvestment in your community does. You lose your high school. That was a 100-year high school.
Yeah.
Rich history, Germantown. Rich history. Rich history of all kinds of races, of all kinds of people being in that school. And they took it away and didn't replace it with anything. And they told them, the U.S. Attorney's Office in 2016 told them, if you close that high school, in 5 years from now, you will have gun violence go up.
Yeah.
They told them then, and they closed it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And what did we see in those areas? The gun violence went up. So I'm trying to share with you, this structural stuff makes a difference. Some people say, well, these people are just beefing each other. We need to work on a beef. Yes, we do. But this structural stuff is causing it. And if we're not doing both of these things, we're going to be in trouble. Move on. 57 blocks. Here are some of the numbers about the blocks so you'll understand. 57 blocks, 10 shootings or more since 2015. Again, we're dealing with the big circle, which is a quarter mile radius around the blocks. That's the time period, 2015 to 2021. 719 homicides on those blocks. 3,249 shooting victims in the 57 block radiuses. That's how many people actually were shot and killed. 53 of the blocks are redlined. That means, well, I just said 37 years ago, in 1937, disinvestment happened in those areas. 42 in pinpoint areas. Pinpoint is what the police do. And so they're over-policing in these areas because of the poverty. Keep going. Philly, this is 5% of the total land mass in Philly, are these red dots, 57 blocks. 18% of all the criminal incidents are, again, in these areas. So it's concentrated in a small area. 30% of all criminal homicides occur on the 57 blocks. 30% of all homicides on these blocks. 37.8% of all criminal homicides ended in arrest. 84.5% of shooting homicides lead to a guilty plea, a guilty verdict. 91% of non-shooting homicides lead to a guilty plea or a guilty verdict. Let me tell you this. police do the best job they can do. I ain't getting on them, but you need to know. They only catch about 37% of the people who commit homicides. Only 37% of them end in an arrest. That means 63% of the people shoot and kill somebody and they never get arrested. Never get arrested. We can't rely on police alone to do this because they can't even catch all the people who shoot and kill people.
We have to police the police.
Mm-hmm. Let me say one other thing. About 20%, they only catch about 20% of the shooters. So people shoot and they're not killed, but they only catch about 20% of the shooters. That means 80% of the young people who shoot never get caught. Never get caught. And they'll say, well, we don't snitch on one another. Well, that's part of it. That's part of it, but that's not the whole thing. That's not the whole thing. One of the things that the DA has stressed, we don't do forensics enough. You know what forensics are.
Yeah.
You know, what's it, SCI? CIA. NSC, whatever. Yeah, but New Orleans, I watched the New Orleans one.
I watch all of them.
You watch all of them. Well, I'm going to tell you, that ain't happening in Philly. Mm-hmm. When the New Orleans brother come out, who came walking and do his computer thing, and all of a sudden, that's it right there. And you got that brother. That's happening on TV. That ain't happening up here. All right? And so the DA has pushed for a $50 million forensic lab so that we would have more of those techniques. Because a lot of people get away with
Scot-free
because we don't have enough science. And also, we don't look and focus on getting the shooters enough. So the police finally set up their own non-fatal shooting unit that only focuses on getting shooters. And we're glad that they did that. But they can do all of that, and it's still not gonna catch them all. And so unless we do something on gun prevention side of it, which all the things you already do and need to do more of, we're never going to be able to solve this problem. Okay.
Yeah, how do we bring y'all office up to speed in the efforts that took place from, we lost a kid in our community and he died right coming in this door. Mm-hmm. And what led to a 4-year murder rate in this whole community. And mm-hmm. out of that 4-year murder rate, we all came together, some of us, and mm-hmm. we created three things. We created the Philadelphia Community Affairs Coalition, mm-hmm. we created Lower North Central CDC, and we also created the Pennsylvania Community Affairs Coalition. So we were trying to get on the state level, and I met you before, I've been up Harrisburg with you plenty of times. So the thing is, we're up to speed in the grassroots. I have a casket sitting in my area for the last 13 years about the murder that's going on over there. And it's 500 unsolved homicides over there. Mm-hmm. So the thing I'm telling you is, we're up to speed and where we need to be at. But how do we get your office to really weigh into what we're doing? Because we're building an economic flea market over here. Right now is 9th from Washington. In the poor community where the murder is at, that we brought the murder rate down, but we don't get no help. We get L&I called doing this. Mm-hmm. The grassroots effort, they don't want us out there because they got who they want that they think is really solving the murder. But we the ones that deal with the day-to-day activity of the stress. So we have three things in place. We was trying to meet at the Met. We was trying, the Met offered us to have a citywide community engagement meeting there, and nobody would push for all of us to get on the same page. But these areas right here, we were able to get on the same page, but then COVID hit, and it kind of like slowed our momentum down. That's how I was able to get the meeting, because my sister called me over here, and I ran over here because it's like, things are starting to happen that's stopping. The murder is starting to stop now. Because it was all out war around here. I'm talking about on every block around here. Yeah. Now, how do we get the resources and to get Larry Krasner's office on board so we can bring y'all up to speed on the efforts that's actually working in the poverty-stricken communities that we need help with?
Well, the first thing is this meeting.
Yes.
So, and I'm going to slow down and not do everything here because I want y'all to have the rest of the time to give us the solutions that y'all are already coming up with. We'll take those solutions, and what we're going to do is put together what is called a budget request out of the DA's office. There's money that will go directly to community groups, and we're looking for much more than $13 million that's already been done. I'm saying $20 to $30 million, but it may be more, based on what we hear from community groups. We've already been in West Philly. We've been in Southwest Philly. We've been away from Germantown last night. We've been in North Philly. We've been in Kensington as well. And we're taking all of what's being said, putting that together, and then we're going to call all of you together to make the statement that we need these resources to go to our communities. And then we're going to put that budget request in, and we're going to need y'all to get on the phone to your council person and say, approve this request. Approve this request. Approve this request. And then once they do it, we'll set up a group of community leaders, and anybody on that board won't get any money. So if you want money, you can't get on the board. And that board will decide where those resources can go. But each community will also decide. Each one of these 57 blocks will have their own plan and be able to say, okay, we need that service. We need this service. We need that service. And you'll be able to draw from them the resources you need. That's what we want to do. That's how we're seeing this in the long run. It may be some tweaks on it along the way, but this first part is just hearing from you and letting you also get a glimpse and an understanding of all of this information, because we want to make sure y'all well-informed to be able to deal and come up with the solutions that we need. That makes sense? That makes sense? So I'm gonna stop at 7:15. We got more stuff, but I'm not gonna get to it. And I want you to divide up into small groups right now. And the one thing I want you to focus in on is solutions. What do you